Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:24 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time, and it is on February 3rd. And today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio and video for the various different asset classes. Now, I thought I'd start off this week looking at currencies, because there has been a great deal of talk about the US dollar. But when we look at it year-to-date, then it is actually among the weakest currencies in the world. The Australian dollar is up about 6.7% on a total return basis so far this year. The US dollar is pretty much unchanged. Just about every currency has done better than it, but most particularly those from the commodity sector. And then if it's not a commodity-related currency, we have to pay special attention to the South Korean won and the Taiwan dollar, because they are not particularly commodity related. There must be something else going on there. We'll look at those charts in a moment. But even the Turkish lira is giving some signs that it has found at least temporary support. And of course, there has been a succession of bearish news about Turkey, and not least because of the deteriorating standards of governance and the autocratic, or perhaps more correctly despotic, aspirations of Erdogan. But when we look at the chart for the Turkish lira, then the dollar has now broken its progression of higher reaction lows. This is at least near-term evidence that support for the lira has been found in the region of 4 to the dollar. And it holds out the prospect that a mean reversion rally might be underway. The Asian dollar index has closed an overextension relative to the trend mean. And that has been a pretty impressive rally so far this year. It is being led higher by the Taiwan dollar. The Taiwan dollar has strengthened pretty impressively over the last month and is now testing a previous area of resistance. This is obviously shown the other way around, so it's the dollar falling rather aggressively against the Taiwan dollar. But it is also worth highlighting that the dollar hit a medium-term peak a year ago, and this is a resumption of that downtrend. The Korean won has not strengthened to the same extent as the Taiwanese dollar, but it has pushed back through the 200-day moving average. It has found support again in the region of 1200, and this is not the first time that it has encountered at least found support in the region of 1200. So that is also rather impressive. And I think that if we are talking about the big picture and the long term, then I think one of the more interesting charts out there right now is the Taiwanese the Taiwanese TAIEX index. It has been ranging below 10,000 for 27 years, and the index is now at 9,455. If one were to simply ignore the big pullback that we saw as a result of the credit crisis, then there is a progression of higher reaction lows from the beginning of the 2000s. That there is a general upward bias within this range. It has been punctuated by two big pullbacks, which were coincident with crashes in major markets elsewhere. But there is a general upward bias, and the Taiwanese dollar is now strengthening, and yet the stock market is moving higher. That would suggest that something is going on there, that we are at least seeing some evidence that there is there are more people than me, at least, that are becoming interested. And that is against a geopolitical background which is fraught with uncertainty, and not least because the Chinese are very protective of the One China policy and are not at all happy that President Trump is putting that back on the table in order to, as part of his tough negotiating way of doing business, to put it kindly. When we look at the Korean market, it has not been ranging for the same amount of time. but it has been ranging for 6 years. That was a big pullback in 2011, and there has been a mild upward bias evident over the last couple of years. But by and large, this was that we can see a very lengthy range between the late 1980s and 2005, and that was completed. And then the index found support in the region of the upper side of that long base formation in 2008. This has been a very lengthy range. We had a type 2 top formation in 2011. You get this massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and it gave way to this very lengthy right-hand extension. And until we had this failed downside break in March of last year, it was, I think, that the jury was out on whether this was a developing type 3 top or whether it was just simply a large consolidation following a pretty impressive rally from the post-credit crisis lows. So then if we look at maybe another couple of these markets, the Thai market is at the upper side of a 3-year range. If we look at that on a much longer term, then that 1600 level coincided with the peak in 1994. So this is another market that has that had a spectacular rally all the way up from the lows in 2008 and has been confined to this rather volatile range for the last 3 years, and it is now once more testing its peak. And a sustained move to new highs would be really quite a clear signal that we are re-entering a demand-dominated environment. The Indian rupee also stood out this week as something that was really noteworthy. They had their budget was announced, it was fiscally conservative, and that has been greeted with enthusiasm by the markets, and the rupee has moved today to a new recovery high. But it also coincides with the region of the trend mean, and therefore it is too early to sound the all clear. The rupee is now in the region of its historic lows. It is one of the few currencies that has not rallied by any discernible margin. And if it can break back below the 200-day moving average, then that would be something quite different. That would suggest that we have evidence then of support, not just in the short term, but potentially in the medium term. And that would be very beneficial indeed for the stock market. And I believe that that is now beginning to be priced in. The Indian market has been ranging for over 2 years already, and it is now pushing back up towards that psychological 9,000 level. I keep a close eye on the Bombay Banks Index because it has been such a reliable lead indicator for years, and it is also pushing back right back up towards those 2015 and 2016 highs. When we look at the long term, then we are also presented with a market that is prone to occasional bouts of extreme volatility. We've seen ample examples of that in the last number of years, and yet it is also capable of trending in a very consistent manner when it can successfully break up out of these lengthy ranging phases. So when we start putting all of this together, the Asian region is looking up, and I don't think that that is a fact that is being appreciated overly, not least because the financial media and the media generally is spending an inordinate amount of time navel gazing, and some of the headlines that we have seen seem to ignore the fact that there is some very important stuff going on in these emerging markets. But it isn't just emerging markets. The FTSE 100 index ranged for 17 years. And I don't know about you, but I think 17 years is a long time. And it is now trading at new all-time highs. This isn't something that we see particularly often, that when we see these very, very long ranges being concluded. And the environment today couldn't be more different than what it was like back in 1999. I graduated college in 1999. There were some of my friends were having serious meetings with private equity investors for no other reason than the fact that they were studying e-commerce. And they didn't even have business ideas, not to mention a business model. And yet they were being considered the new crop of innovators. And that is not what we see today. That despite the fact that Snapchat is approaching its IPO and has a more exp a considerably more expensive cost per user than Facebook did when it IPO'd, then that is what is required today before anyone is willing to give money. That they have to have the potential at least to garner a market share. But more importantly, back in 1999, everybody wanted to own shares. There was no argument about whether you should own shares. It was more about which shares should you own. Whereas today, there is a much more involved argument. It is an argument more about whether one should have investments in property, or whether one should have investments in stocks, or whether bonds are still the best safe haven. And that's important because what we have seen over the last 17 years have been two crashes. That if anyone was buying in the early 2000s, they probably have very little to show for their investment of between 15 and 17 years. So that is something that is conditioning. It has a conditioning influence on the way people think. That when the index has looked positive, then anyone who bought at the upper side of the range had to sit through swingeing pullbacks. 7,000 to 3,500 is a 50% retracement, and it is a doubling from trough to peak. So that then represents a trader's environment where traders do rather well by buying the dips, but investors have a very difficult time being that nimble. It requires a nimble approach to markets in order to be successful. I think the most important point is that the last time we got up to this level, which was at the beginning of 2015, we saw a sharp pullback. But that pullback was nothing compared to the pullbacks that we'd seen previously. And now we're trading at new all-time highs. This is a, so far, it is a sustained breakout. And provided the breakout is sustained, then we would give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. If this were any other market, then people would probably consider that it was at least worth a bet. But because it's a big country index, and because the news flow is so filled with uncertainty, then I think people are gun shy. They are less likely to bet on the stock market because they don't want to be caught out by another one of these very large pullbacks like we saw in 2000 and like we saw in 2007. I think perhaps more important, though, is that if we look at historical precedent, that these very rangy, very volatile phases give way to rhythmically trending environments. And Wall Street is an example of that. Wall Street has led on the recovery. Wall Street also had this very volatile environment Wall Street was volatile the last time that it looked at that 1500 level, and yet it was able to break upwards and then run higher. It outperformed by a considerable margin over the last few years, and it is now outperforming again. That's an important factor. It would suggest that if we now know which the lead market is, that Wall Street is certainly leading on the upside, and that it represents, and we have talked for many years about the Wall Street leash effect. The US economy is by far the largest. It is still the biggest center of capital in the world, and it is leading on the upside. There is ample catch-up potential for markets like the FTSE 100. And when we look at other UK markets, they have done substantially better than the FTSE 100. The mid-cap index is also now breaking to a new high following a pretty volatile process of consolidation over the last few years. And the mid-caps have done substantially better, not least because they are interest rate sensitive. They don't have the same record of paying out dividends that the larger cap shares have. That is something that is probably worth thinking about, because we have been through an incredibly low interest rate environment. And when interest rates are low, then growth does well. And interest rates are low. If we look at the gilt yield, just to keep it within the UK, the gilt yield has compressed steadily. There is still a progression of lower rally highs. We've seen a pretty impressive rally in yields over the last 6 months, but it has lost momentum somewhat. It really does need to sustain a move back above the 160 area, and if it were to do that, then we'd have better evidence that this is not just a counter-trend rally. Most particularly, if it can sustain this move above the trend mean within this short-term consolidation, well, then we would also have evidence that we are back in a supply-dominated environment. This isn't obviously the first time that yields have traded above the 200-day moving average. They did it in 2015, they did it in 2013, they did it in 2011. But on none of those occasions was the move sustained. Therefore, the move has to be sustained. Not only does it have to be sustained, but that the yield must move back above 1.6%. And that would be a clear indication that the outlook for yields is rising, the outlook for inflation is also increasing, and that should favor larger cap shares, because it is larger cap shares have the potential to raise their dividends. And when you have a rising interest rate environment, stocks are generally among the better performers because they can offer an inflation hedge. They can raise their prices and they can raise their dividends. Mid-caps would be under pressure to raise their prices, and large caps would be under pressure to raise their both prices and their dividends. If people are going to invest in stocks, they will want to have a competitive yield. And the FTSE right now, or the gilt right now, yields 1.35%, and the FTSE is stuffed with shares that have got substantially higher yields than that, and the index itself yields 3.94%. So that is one of the clearest reasons why anybody is looking at large cap shares once more, that they can pick up quite a significant yield premium by buying large cap shares, and that in and of itself represents a hedge against the potential for interest rates to rise. US interest rates are certainly rising. The UK is probably going to be under no hurry to raise interest rates. When we start to think about what is it that, and if we go back right back to that first chart that we looked at the very beginning, and it is just to remind ourselves that it is the commodity-related currencies have been among the best performers. The continuous commodity index is coming off of pretty low levels. That it had trended lower for a prolonged period, it had posted this rather impressive counter-trend rally in the first half of 2016, and it has been consolidating since. So, and it had also got right down to test the 2008 lows. It has broken the short-term progression of lower rally highs, and it does look increasingly likely that it is going to be able to sustain the breakaway from the trend mean. When we look at the Australian market, it has got two competing factors when we look at the performance of the ASX. The first is that the Aussie dollar has been among the strongest currencies in the world, and it has a significant tailwind in the fact that interest rates are comparatively high in Australia relative to a number of other jurisdictions. Against that background, the fact that the currency has been a bit of a headwind, we have the outperformance of the commodity complex. The resources sector has been boosted by the return to outperformance of iron ore, the substantial run-up in coking coal prices, and the recovery in oil prices. These are the primary exports that Australia sends, and not least to China. That was the ASX Resources Index. The FTSE 350 mining index has got a very similar pattern, despite the fact that you have a difference in the currencies. China today raised their short-term borrowing costs, but only incrementally. They are trying to arrest the decline of the renminbi. They've so far been able to manage the decline in a very orderly manner. So far, this looks like another one of these short-term pullbacks and consolidations, which is allowing the overextension relative to the trend mean to be unwound. But it would really require a break in that progression of higher reaction lows to question the dollar dominance over the medium term. Copper prices today were a bit weaker. This would suggest that there is continued resistance in the region of $2.75 on that COMEX contract. However, when we look at it over the longer term, it is quite clear that the downtrend from the 2011 peak has ended, and that this represents a first step above the Type 2 base. And today's downdraft would suggest that it is not about to be resolved on the upside this week. But it would really require a sustained move below the trend mean to really question that this isn't a medium-term demand-dominated environment. The Brazilian real is testing its peak. It has been largely range-bound for the last 5 or 6 months, and it is now testing, or the dollar is testing its lows. The South African rand, which as recently as last year was trading close to 18, has strengthened up to 13 and a quarter, and is also testing the dollar is testing its lows here. This has been a substantial improvement in the fortunes of a number of these commodity producing countries, and we have to consider why. The news headlines are absolutely filled with with prognostications about what is likely to be good or bad resulting from President Trump's shaking up of the status quo. What we can see so far, though, is that commodity prices are firming, emerging market currencies are firming, There is the real prospect that he is going to follow through on his campaign pledges. That no one was willing to take him seriously, that and now it is looking increasingly likely that he was very serious in everything that he said. And that would suggest that there is going to be a fiscal bump. Now, we know that this year is filled with issues for Europe, and most particularly in France, where there is an election in April. The Republican candidate, Fillon, has been castigated for employing members of his household and paying them rather extravagantly, and they doing absolutely no work at all. It cannot be simply ignored the possibility that Marine Le Pen will be the next president of France. And that is looking increasingly likely what the oats market is pricing in. French government bond yields are up to 1%. They're trading 60 basis points over bunds, and from a chart perspective, that the yield found support in the region of the trend mean, and now it's at a new high. This looks like a recovery trajectory. It looks like there is ample opportunity for additional yield expansion in the French government bond markets. And the winding down of Banca Monte Paschi di Siena has been completed. The share has been delisted, and predictably it was a fudge. The junior subordinated bonds owned by retail investors were saved, and everyone else was wiped out. The very senior bondholders will get something back. The equity has been wiped out. Realistically, they really should have wiped out all of the junior bondholders, but that was politically untenable. And not least because Mario Draghi is a former executive of the bank, and it could have resulted in some serious blowback for the ECB. But what these resolutions mask is deeper problems within the EU, that there is a rise of populism. The rise of populism is in response to the self-imposed straitjacket that Europe has been functioning under, where they refused to write off the debts because it was banks within the core of the Eurozone had been lending to the periphery. To write off the debts would simply have been to give a get out of jail free card to many countries in the periphery. They were forced to all abide by this fiscal straitjacket, and that resulted in a deflationary environment, low yield, high unemployment, and that has resulted in the rise of populism. There is really only one way they're going to hold together the euro, and that is going to be to abandon the fiscal straitjacket. The US is moving towards fiscal stimulus. Japan has already been engaged in fiscal stimulus for a number of years. China raised interest rates by 10 basis points, which is hardly aggressive. And they are unlikely to completely abandon their own fiscal stimulus. The big hole in a global synchronized fiscal expansion is Europe. And I suspect that by the end of this year, we will have greater evidence that Europe will begin to fall into line and at least allow some of these countries to increase their fiscal stimulus for their respective economies. Because if they don't do that, it is only a matter of time before a populist government gets into power and then breaks the place up. What we're seeing in stock markets is that they are pricing in the potential that there will be a fiscal stimulus, that the euro will survive, and that the Europeans will do what is necessary to ensure its sustainability. And I think that is the most likely scenario, because we know that the one thing that bureaucrats can be relied upon to do is to ensure their own position, and I think that that is perhaps the easiest of all prognostications to make for this year. If we do move, we've gone through a period of global economic expansion, then monetary expansion, now we're going to fiscal expansion, then government bond yields should rise. It might well be the answer to the secular decline in the velocity of money, that if you can put more money in people's pockets, that they will spend it, and that that should help to drive economic growth. That is something we will not have evidence of until it actually occurs. One of the things that has contributed to the decline in the velocity of money is the increasing pace of technological innovation, and the fact that that is not only a fact, but that it is accelerating, is going to represent a continued challenge. It is going to require an imaginative policy response from government. It's going to also require that governments even begin to talk about the problem. And so far, there has been precious little of that. And that is also part of the reason why we have had a run-up in populism, and not just in Europe, but in the UK and the USA as well. And considering the nationalistic tendencies of Xi Jinping, we might also conclude that there is a certain tone of populism in China. And this is, I think, the crux of the issue. Technological innovation is an incredibly benign factor. It has helped to raise millions of people out of poverty. But it has the benefits have been unequal. If it is going to continue to represent a positive force, then there is going to have to be a realistic appreciation of what the challenges are. And I'm pretty optimistic that that is on the cards, that there is the possibility that we are going to have governments that do address the kind of challenges that exist. Oil prices are comparatively low. They are still on a recovery trajectory. There has been a short-term range underway for the last couple of months after such a large drawdown, and we have evidence now that that oil prices have found support in the region, not exactly at, but in the region of $40 on two separate occasions over the last decade. And that $40 was a crisis peak previously, that represents the lower side of a large developing range. And the upper side of that range could be $120, that we could see prices ranging for a prolonged period. If this range turns into anything like the previous range, then it is unlikely that we spend very much time at the upper side of the range, that prices range spend most of their time in a volatile manner below the midpoint of that range. And the midpoint of that range is about $80. Prices are right now at $56. So we know that there is ample supply becomes available at $80. If President Trump does, in fact, permit the XL pipeline, and it is looking increasingly likely that he will, that is going to allow Canada's massive supplies of stranded oil to enter the global market, and that would represent quite a challenge for OPEC. So when we then look at what the oil price is likely to do, it's likely to be volatile. It is still going up in the short term. We do not yet know exactly what the level is at which a large quantity of new supply will enter the market. But we do know there is a level that will represent that that change. And when we hit it, we can anticipate then that prices will rally between about 30 and whatever that level is. And that could be for the lengthy medium term. So we have that to contend with, because if we have low energy prices, that's also deflationary. And Also, it is a boost to growth. It removes a headwind to growth that we have had. And that would suggest that we could have an environment where we get growth without inflation, at least on the energy front. But central banks need inflation. They're going to do whatever they can to foster inflation. And that could result in some pretty exaggerated moves because technology is deflationary. So they would have to inflate enough to overwhelm the deflationary impact of technological innovation. And that, I think, brings us to really think about where are we in terms of the long-term Dow-Gold ratio. Because this is an index, this is a ratio where we have a great deal of back history. We have evidence of major cyclical, excuse me, secular bull and bear markets in stocks and commodities. It is looking increasingly likely that the low in 2011 was a secular peak for gold relative to the Dow Jones, or it was a secular low for the Dow Jones against gold. And of course, it's a ratio, and neither of the two constituents are going to stay static. But what it suggests is that if that was the low in 2011, and we have seen a substantial rebound on that ratio, that we could be in a new secular bull market for stocks and a secular bear market for gold. If secular bear markets are any, if we have any evidence, and we've looked at plenty in the context of this recording, then gold prices might be in a prolonged range and are quite possibly towards the lower side of that range right now. And that by the time the secular bull market in gold in stocks has run its course, and it could take a decade or two in order to do that, that this ratio will be at a new high. And that would suggest that conservatively, if the last peak was at 15, and the second peak, sorry, the first peak was around 15, the second peak was below 30, the third peak was below 45 or around 40. Well, then it would be conservative to say that the next peak will be greater than 50. And if gold prices were at $1,000 in 20 years' time, then the Dow Jones could be at 50,000. So that is a substantial move. That would be an 100% advance on where prices are today. It might not all happen in one go, and I think we can say that for absolutely certain, and it could be associated with a great deal of inflation, considering that governments have got a clear incentive to inflate, considering how much debt they've got. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.